Okay. Want me to go first? Okay.
Please.
I'm Jean Lemieux, and I'm with the Child Care Resource and Referral, and I really appreciate the opportunity to come and talk with you all this morning. I wanted to start my conversation with you all with a question that was asked at a meeting with 85 early childhood folks just the other day. And the question that was presented was, where are the 7-year-olds in your community? And, of course, the answer was they were all in school. And then the question was, where are the 2.5-year-olds today? And, of course, the answer was they're everywhere. They're at home. They're at child care. They're with family. They're with friends. They are in many different places. We know from research how important the years 0 to 5 are for getting children ready to learn. And so we have very little time to really make a difference for these children and for the community, because we know that your 2.5-year-old today will be, in a really very short period of time, your 20-year-old in the community who we want to have to be good citizens. So I'm really looking forward to being involved in looking at this community, finding out what exists in the community, and figuring out what services we can advocate to bring on board to make a difference in this particular community. And I really see it as a model for potentially what we do throughout the entire community. Thank you for your time. I also want to indicate how much I appreciate Debbie bringing us on board. And I also think that Anne, in her 2 hats, has really made a difference in bringing this issue to the community. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Great.
Yes. Mayor Adams, commissioners, it's always an honor and blessing to be with you. I appreciate a couple of minutes of your time today to lend our voice with other community partners who have participated in the Cully Concordia plan. And I want to really give thanks to all the community folks who could not be here, who have been actively involved in all those committees that we wordsmith and we try to work something out. I think that it's truly something that we've really benefited by, let's say, providing or contributing our support and our direct involvement. NEA, the organization that I work with, has essentially represented an interest over the years on schools, housing, and jobs. And I think it's the last part that I want to speak specifically about, and that is the economic development work that I think is so vital to the community. And I am pursuing it just from a slightly different angle, and that is one of equity and trying to close the economic gaps that I think exist, especially in those communities that have been historically disenfranchised, that we'd like to find meaningful work and training programs and actually real living wage jobs. So I won't repeat all that's been said by our partners today, but I think that I would ask for your continued support of moving this Cully Concordia Action Plan forward, for your continued support and investment, and specifically the partnership that you lend to community folks like ours, and that is to looking for, you know, broader community solutions to how we can advance much of what we want to do, reduce overcrowded schools, provide access to reasonable, affordable housing, to create home ownership and community building activities. We're actively involved in many of these anti-poverty kind of related activities. And specifically, we think that the time has come for us to be more actively engaged in economic development. And I think that we're lending our voice and support on the Green Jobs Initiatives that you'll be hearing more about. And I think that could be a focal point in the Cully Concordia area. So we look for your support. So with that, I'll pass it on. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ray, for all your work.
Good morning. Good morning, Mayor Adams. Good morning, commissioners. It's a pleasure to be here. The beautiful thing about the Cully Concordia Community Action Plan is it's not just sitting on a shelf gathering dust. It is a very active and dynamic document. And Debbie's done an incredible job of bringing together a diverse group of organizations and individuals. You've heard this morning about the power and the opportunity around early childhood development, around child care, the importance of that for the community, and the link to the economy as well. You've heard about the challenge of business development in this area, and you've heard about the power and the energy behind the Cully Green Street Main Street project, and you've heard about the increasing number of challenges in these two neighborhoods. But I'm here to bring good news as well as draw your attention to those challenges. Because of the energy behind this plan and Debbie's leadership, Concordia University has really been able to step up and participate in ways that I don't think we had fathomed before. All of you are informed, I think, about what's happening in the Cully-Concordia community and probably informed about some of the things happening on our campus, including the opening of the 74,000-square-foot gold LEED certified library and learning center. In less than 3 months, we have distributed 500 community library cards at no cost. And of course, you're all aware that there really aren't library resources very close by for either of those communities. We had Greg Mortensen, the author of Three Cups of Tea, on campus recently. And the cutest picture in the world is Greg Mortensen, who's a very tall individual, reading to all of the third grade classes from Fabian Elementary School, which is right next door to us. In fact, I think I see more Fabian students going through our library than I do Concordia students some days. I'm going to check that out, see what's going on. After the first of the year, our accounting students will be working with Cash Oregon, the AARP program, to prepare tax returns for low-income individuals who have not otherwise claimed their earned income tax credits. And we've just opened a Service Corps of Retired Executives office on campus to help with business development. All of this has attracted a lot of attention from the institutional philanthropic community, the foundations whose names you know, United Way and others, and a lot of the major nonprofits. And in fact, as a result of all these activities, we have started a host of increasing partnership conversations and dialogues with PPS around Fabian, with United Way, and with a couple of national organizations that serve children at risk. But I want to conclude by saying the sine qua non of this is the catalytic leadership that Debbie Bischoff is providing. And as you look in these challenging budget times to try to get more from less, just know that Debbie already delivers tenfold, and I'm sure this next year it'll step up to 20-fold. And her leadership and connection with this project is absolutely essential. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. Gary, could I just make one point? There's an important event occurring at Strasser Saturday at 4, and I want to give you a chance to announce it.
Yes, we have a soccer playoff game.
The women of Concordia are marching towards a national championship in D3, and they're playing at 4 o'clock Saturday at Strasser, which is a city-owned facility, and we would welcome everyone to come out and cheer them on. What's their nickname?
Cavaliers, the Cavs.
Well, we hope go Cavs. Come out and cheer on. Go to the Pilots on Friday night to support them and the Cavs on Saturday afternoon.
And the Cavs.
And I'll be at both. So,
the Cavs came within one goal of winning the national championship last year. So this is the start of that march, but it's a game worth watching. Thank you, Nick.
Good luck. Thank you all very much. Really appreciate it. Sue, would you please call the vote?
Leonard.
Well, this is obviously a very well put together plan, and Debbie's getting rightfully a lot of accolades. And the key to success, Debbie, is to make yourself indispensable, and you've done that. So you're very successful. So I appreciate all the good, balanced work that's gone into this.
Fritz. This is Portland at our best, governments and community working together to get things done. And this is not just a plan. This is a plan, an action plan to get things done. And it's also our neighborhood associations at our best. And we are no longer a handful of people sitting around talking about land use issues, although I have to note that the Cully Association of Neighbors resurgence led by Kathy Furstenow started with an appeal to get the park of Sacagawea and the development around it. And similarly, Mr. Granger mentioned that the Concordia Neighborhood Association really resurged in helping to get the new seasons plan on Killingsworth done so that it's as good as it is today. So, and I want to commend Tony Fuentes and others in Concordia and Cully that I'm very proud of our neighborhood association system and I'm happy to be supporting it and happy to see results coming from it. I have to add to the accolades for Debbie, even though you're saying your head is swelling. Well, it should, because you do a really great job and you exemplify the good work of the Planning Bureau over many decades in Portland. And thank you for all of your work. I'm mentioning also that Harvey Scott was one of the schools I listed as closing the Hispanic achievement gap. And so when you see the community coming together, the children notice. And there isn't an exact correlation, but I'm sure it helps. And so we also in government are thinking about how we can help. There were members of Verde and Mayor Adams's staff from transportation in my office earlier this year looking at the Cully Green Street and how could we employ more local workers in those contracts. Sometimes we can and sometimes we can't, but the important thing is we're thinking about it at every turn and looking for ways to do better, and we are doing better, so I greatly appreciate that. And we need to continue to do better, so I urge you all to continue using these partnerships to help look for the money, which is going to fund many of these improvements. Government can't do everything. Government shouldn't do everything. And so we're going to need the same creativity that's gone into creating this action plan to find the money to help fund many of the actions. So thank you very much. Aye.
Fish.
So I want to go back to 2002, and I have a specific recollection of that year because I was, among other things, a candidate. And I remember we were in the teeth of a recession, and one of the prime issues that was framed for debate during that election was the negative role played by planners in our community. In fact, the entire campaign was based on the notion that we had a bad economy, that we had significant challenges, and that we need to blame someone, so planners became the scapegoat. And in fact, there was a lot of talk about significantly reducing the number of planners at the city as if that would lead us to this promised land. And here we are, fast forward, in the middle of another significant economic downturn. But rather than looking to planners as the problem, we look to planners as the pathway to getting out of this mess and to helping us as a community work together to solve problems. And I just find that just that historical frame quite stunning. And so one thing I want to acknowledge today is that when we talk about someone in the abstract, like politicians, we often import a lot of negative feelings, and it's easy to sort of dismiss them. But when we actually look at what people do, public servants, we sometimes have a different view. It reminds me that, you know, the polls say that people hate Congress but love their congressman, sort of that schizophrenia. So I want to begin by simply saying that in my first year and change on the council, what I've come to appreciate is the vital role that planners, community-based planners, play. And I said this when you first came before us, and I'll say it again. The East Portland Action Plan and the Cully Concordia Plan were, I think, two of the finest community processes that we've seen a long time in this community. And I think part of the success that the mayor had last night kicking off the Portland Plan was the credibility that was earned by doing those plans and now saying we're going to take it to a different scale. I think it actually was the foundation stone for public confidence that we can get it right on a larger scale. Now, there's a lot of talk and, frankly, idle talk about Debbie up here, about what a great job she's done. I, for one, who believe in action, have already been talking to both HR and planning about bumping you into parks. So I just want you to know that
over my dead body.
They can talk all they want, but we're looking for a pathway to actually get you on our team. But Debbie, in addition to just the quality of your work, I will say again that as you sort of are the front line and you go in and engage people and catch the flack early, then we go to the events later and take the temperature of the place. And you have made it so positive for us to engage Cully Concordia because when we go now on the action plan items, instead of the usual, I think, and justifiable skepticism about is City Hall listening and are you going to do something, we now have partnerships with everyone here who testified today. And I was struck by that because Amanda frequently reminds us that we have 95 neighborhoods and associations, and so Cully Concordia is a very small component of the larger city. But as we were talking about action items in the report and with the testimony, I was struck by how this process has framed priorities that the council has in turn embraced. So just the ones that jumped out at me are Thomas Culley Park. And so we've done the master plan, and now we're actually going to put it in a future bond application on the capital side to build it. Would that have happened without this process? We are engaged in lots of conversations about what to do with the old Whitaker site. And when Portland Public Schools and Concordia and the community are finished with those conversations, many interesting things could happen, from a community garden to a rec center. But would that have happened without a plan, sort of framing this issue? As the Parks Commissioner, I'm committed to upgrading Fern Hill in many different ways, including providing better recreational opportunities for our children. That comes right out of an action item. The new park, the land that we acquired at Northeast Alberta and 51st, no sooner had we acquired it than the action item is build it and develop it. On housing, we heard from Ray, one of our trusted partners at NAIA, and also we heard from Hacienda and the work that they're doing. Well, you know, I'm as the housing commissioner, we have dozens of partners and hundreds of housing. But why is it that I know so much about the Ortiz Center? And why is it that I know about the challenges of Clara Vista? And when it was eloquently stated by Pietro that there's a lot of trailer parks that are at risk, why does this council know that? Why are we engaged in that? Well, again, I believe it's because of the plan. And we could go on and on and on. But I think the lesson of this is we have a very successful process for engaging a community and allowing the community to drive the planning process. The challenge is to extend this to the whole city. And that's, I guess, what the promise of the Portland plan is, to take these discrete plans and wrap them into a larger vision, but also to continue to find the resources to allow other communities to plan and chart their destinies, to have their plans. I think it really is among the finest work that's been presented to council, at least during my tenure, and it's a pleasure to support your good work and the folks in the community that are making this happen. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I want to also thank everybody, the neighbors and Debbie and Bureau Planning Sustainability staff and other city staff, no doubt, who have been involved in this process. But I think it's what really stands out to me is the fact that we're looking at a neighborhood action plan that actually has something about early childhood development in it. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I think this is a first, and hopefully it will be a model for all plans to come. It's very unprecedented for us at the City Council to be sitting here and even thinking about these types of issues sort of at the city level. We're sort of always viewed as the ones who, you know, deal with roads, parks, public safety, transportation. But, you know, and we all care about children, that's for sure. But seldom has it actually been articulated as tangibly as it has been here in terms of the hopes and aspirations for one particular neighborhood to take care of its youngest children and assure that they have a path to success like many other children in the city do. And certainly the need is in the Culley Concordia neighborhood. So I really want to thank you for setting this precedent. And I believe if I can have anything to do with it, I'll make sure it's a precedent that we see in all future action plans. So thank you, and it's a great plan. Please to vote aye.
Adams.
Well, I want to thank you, Debbie, as well, and Deborah Stein, who oversees this general area of endeavor for the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. Thank you for your leadership as well, and the entire team that's been part of this, both on the city side and the community side, academia. It is indeed the best of the best. Thank you. Aye. So approved. Can you please read the title for non-emergency ordinance, item number 1621?
Vacate a portion of Southeast Berkeley Way at Southeast Tenino Street, subject to certain conditions and reservations.
All right.
You skipped ahead to, I'm sorry, 16 what?
We're back on the regular agenda.
16 what?
21.
21.
Any questions from the City Council on this matter? Anything you want to highlight for us? Who are you?
I'm Teresa Talbot with the Department of Transportation.
Thank you very much. Anyone wish to testify on 1621? Move to a second reading. Can you please read the title for resolution, item number 1622, Sue?
Since this was a hearing, is there anyone here who wants to testify?
I already did that. Nobody wants to testify.
Okay. Yep. All righty. 1622, amend the South Waterfront District Street Plan, Criteria, and Standards document and direct its implementation.
So this is policy direction to the City Bureau of Transportation to include this street plan criteria and standards attached in Exhibit A into the transportation system plan and the South Waterfront Zoning Code, where it does become binding. But today we're going to hear how this builds on previous items before the City Council on this matter in 1996, 97, 2002, 03, 07, and just earlier this year, the North McAdam Transportation Development Strategy.
Right.
Pierce.
Mr. Mayor and Council, thanks for having us this morning. My name is Art Pierce. I'm a project manager with the City of Portland's Office of Transportation, and with me today is Geraldine Moyle from PDC and Troy Das from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. This was a joint effort, so we thought we would present it as such and give you a little bit of background on what brought us here today. So really, this is an update on the street plan is the Council's action today, but there is also sort of the history of how we came to this action is really born out of a process of looking at the north end of South Waterfront called the North District and the North District Partnership. So I'll give you a little background, and then we'll walk through a little bit of the story. So the area that we're talking about is essentially between the Ross Island Bridge and the Markham Bridge. So that's the north end of South Waterfront that currently is primarily vacant other than one development site. With the introduction... There we go. Terrific. With the introduction of a new light rail alignment through the city's adoption of a locally preferred alternative for the Portland to Milwaukee light rail project, essentially this area of South Waterfront was ready for some change and for some revisions to both the vision for the area and the street plan. In terms of ownership, this is an area that is owned in large part by Zidell, both an active marine facility as well as adjacent property that they've owned for quite a number of years. And then the area to the north is what was once the Snitzer property that was donated to OHSU some years ago and is the future home for the OHSU academic campus. The third property owner is GHS, and that is the site of the Swinderton building, as many of us know it historically. So in terms of approach, I'll let Geraldine walk us through the process that we went through with the property owners, and then Troy will talk some about the some of the other specific items.
Great. Thanks, Art.
Yep.
So we took a partnership approach to the North District, where we elevated the city staff to the director level of six bureaus, and that was the three bureaus you see here today, PBOT, PDC, and BPS. But we also had BES, Parks, and BDS involved in the process. We met frequently with the property owners, and that's OHSU, ZRZ, and GHS, but also at the table were TriMet for light rail, Metro, also for light rail, and then also the Portland Streetcar, because they were key components of the North District as well. We had a series of meetings. We had a design work session and a charrette, and then several intra-bureau discussions about the partnership, the approach, and the process. What we were trying to get out of the process were several things. Our desired outcomes included agreement from all parties on the direction for the North District, a final location and cross-sections of all the North, South, and East, West streets, a proposed finish grade of streets, and that was important not only for light rail, but also because, if you recall, the Central District is actually elevated as well. So there, to some extent, there needs to be a slope of grade between the North District, the Central District, and then also River Place to the north of the area as well. We looked at timing and phasing of infrastructure, parks and open space, any conflicts with existing zoning, and Troy will talk a little bit about that. And then we also, one of the main things we were doing was informing the Willamette River Partnership about the alignment and the elevation of light rail in the North District of South Waterfront. That is something they needed in regards to moving forward with the construction drawings for light rail. With the six-month process, we reached some areas of consensus. The first was that we agreed on a street system plan, and Art will get into much more detail on that. We agreed on phasing for those streets. We did agree on an elevation for light rail at Porter, and that is consistent with the elevation that is in the Willamette River Crossing Partnership findings. We agreed in terms of funding for all of the streets and infrastructure that it was not viable to fund all of the streets at this time. But what we did reach agreement on was that phase one, which Art will go into more detail on, was the most essential part, components of the infrastructure, and that funding for that portion of the infrastructure was important. We agreed to a funding process that's about 90% public and 10% private, and that is very similar to the Central District agreement for streets in South Waterfront, where the public paid for the north-south streets and the private development paid for the east-west streets. And part of that is because the north-south streets are the key collectors, if you will, that bring people in and out of the district, so the essential parts. The other thing to note is that part of the reason why we did this partnership at this time, in addition to light rail, is that OHSU has a master plan that was being finalized. And then we also had a lot of development interests for the other parcels in the North District, but without an actually defined street plan for that area, it has been difficult for any of those property owners to move forward with development. So I think that's another thing that's important to note as we, for the reasons why we put the partnership together. There were two areas where we didn't agree or have an area of or have consensus, and those two are on the slide with you right now. And both are actually okay. The first is that, again, we didn't agree on the funding process for phase 1B and 2. And again, those are streets and infrastructure that will happen at a later date, and so not having an agreement on that funding is all right. The other item was we did not agree on a location size and cost responsibilities for an active use park. But what we have shown on the plans is a location for that park, and Troy will get into a little more detail on the park.
All right, so the parks and open space. One of the things we really wanted to make sure of when we went forward with this plan was if we're going to redo the framework of the district, really the public rights of way, we wanted to make sure that the original park concept held true, because that was one of the big items that came out of the South Waterfront effort in 2002. And it was really held cherished that both by the South Portland community as well as the new residents coming in the South Waterfront that we really needed this parks and open space network that we had originally proposed. Another thing is this map shows here is that the district as a whole, South Portland, is parks deficient, especially for active recreation. So we wanted to make sure that when we have these large opportunity sites such as South Waterfront, we're doing whole cloth redevelopment, we make sure that we can maximize our investment in that district and get the open space that's needed not only for the new densities in that district, but also for the community as a whole. So this demonstrates that to a degree. The idea of doing the park framework really started back in 1999 with the framework plan, originally the North McAdam framework plan. It didn't evolve that much. It was really kind of more enhanced as the 2002 South Waterfront plan came along. And then we reinvestigated it a little bit in 2005 once the plan was adopted. We started looking at, we did an urban design charrette to see where are we at in the district and how, what mid-course corrections do we probably need to make. The charrette effort told us a couple things. One, development pattern was shaping up in a different way in which we thought the early phases would. So that informed the kind of a slightly different street and urban form kind of concept where we might locate retail, how retail and the new developments responding to the open space network. We also knew that we probably were going to have to go forward with a couplet design to deal with the capacity issues. And Art will deal with that a little bit more. But that was going to change the landscape a little bit in the district as well. So we started thinking, if we do this couplet to the north from the central district, that's going to change our thinking about this original idea of doing a large park facility in the middle, which was informally referred to as Ross Island Bridge Park. The original concepts for the framework plan and South Waterfront had it extending from the Greenway all the way back to Moody. And there was a couple sections where a street came through, but really it was one continuous piece for the most of it. Well, as we start putting this couplet through, it starts breaking it up. So we were tasked at one point to say, if you can find an additional 4 to 5 acres of space within the same general location and still accommodate that function, is it possible in the district? And lo and behold, it is. If you put it adjacent to the Greenway, closer to the end of where the Ross Island Bridge really takes off,
There's a very large space there that allows you to do better active programming for recreation than we could have actually done in the original design. So this went forward with the street plan. So what we show here is that, yes, we can change the street plan, accommodate light rail, accommodate OHSU, create a street pattern that we think better accommodates future development for both the GHS and Zidell properties, and allows us to create a significant recreational amenity in the center of the district.
So in terms of what does this mean in terms of a street plan, so out of the North District Partnership, really the revisions to the street plan is the one official action that is occurring out of that process. So out of these two images here, the upper image is the 2007 street plan, or the existing street plan, and below is a small image of the revised one that I'll walk you through in a little bit more detail. Obviously, one key element is that now the street plan has been revised to accommodate the light rail alignment coming through the center of the North District, and that the essentially all the east-west streets have been readjusted. Same number of east-west streets have been moved to accommodate the alignment of Porter as where the light rail will come through. One thing to note is we do think that a similar process is needed in the southern end to prepare this district to support the Portland to Lake Oswego streetcar process. So we are having conversations at the staff level about having a similar conversation about how South Waterfront can ready itself for that project. So in terms of overall circulation, in the central district currently, Moody and Bond function as one-way streets, as a couplet. What we're proposing is that the entirety of Moody would function as a one-way street southbound for vehicular traffic, and that Bond would function as a one-way street northbound for vehicular traffic as well. River Parkway, which is more thought of as the sort of quieter neighborhood street within the district, would continue as a two-way street all the way to the north, but stop prior to where the light rail alignment comes through. So the end of River Parkway would be at Woods, and that essentially Bond would connect over to where River Parkway previously was aligned in the northern end of the district. Although the street plan doesn't designate uses next to it, there is a designation within the street plan that articulates when it's adjacent to a park's use. And so there are two special design areas within the district that have been adjusted to these new street alignments to show where the streets are adjacent to the greenway or adjacent to the proposed location for the active use park. Moody Avenue, I think, will become really a pretty unique street within the district because of the presence of streetcar and our proposal here. So southbound Moody will have two lanes of vehicular traffic, one of which would carry streetcar. Northbound would be in the short term, phase one, Moody would carry both autos and streetcar northbound. In the future, when we've constructed Bond Avenue, we would no longer need vehicular traffic to head northbound on Moody, and so this would be a streetcar-only lane within that section of Moody.
I just have a question on that.
Yeah, sure.
So, in the rest of the city, the streetcar and autos go in the same lanes. Is it envisioned that there'll be two lanes of southbound traffic?
Yes. So there's two lanes as to match up with the capacity of the rest of the street network. Mm-hmm. Essentially, we would have two lanes heading southbound, one of which would be shared with streetcar.
And then the north lane will be just streetcar.
Once we have Bond to accommodate the vehicular traffic. So in the short term, Bond would be the northbound lane here would be doing double duty, essentially. One of the other issues that we've heard continuously, I think, throughout the city is the concern about conflicts between streetcar and bicycle traffic. And so a proposal that we're able to do here, because there is no street network to the west, essentially the freeways to the west of Moody Avenue, is we're able to include a two-way cycle track on the west edge of Moody Avenue that moves the bicycle traffic out of the way of conflicting with the streetcar movements.
Thank you for pointing that out.
One other thing to note, so you can see how Moody Avenue on the far right edge here has that it's 14 feet above existing grade. That is what Geraldine referred to earlier. As these are brownfield sites adjacent to these, the raising of the street grade allows for tuck-under parking to occur beneath the building sites without impacting the contaminants that might be present in the soil.
So are the streets going east-west going to be all raised up too?
They would, right. So the entire street network would be raised. In some locations, there actually is possible there could be parking beneath the east-west streets as well as proposed in the OHSU master plan.
And will that help or hurt the views of the river?
It will actually probably help because we'll have a higher elevation to the east, or sorry, the west side of the district, and lower to the west. So we'll actually be able to have that kind of down the street view to the greenway we haven't been able to accomplish elsewhere.
Thank you.
It's also important to note that it's 14 feet at Porter. It's less than that throughout the rest of the district because it has to get back down to the existing grade at Gibbs and at River Place as well. Thank you.
A couple other unique places within the new street plan. So one is Porter Street itself. So the upper cross section is what will be coming off of the new light rail bridge. So as the transitway comes through, we'll have streetcars, buses, light rail, as well as accommodations for pedestrians and cyclists. So it'll be really quite an urban center with as much transit capacity as probably will happening really anywhere within the city. The second is beneath the Ross Island Bridge, there's a need to keep development back from the Ross Island Bridge for a certain distance required by ODOT to allow for maintenance of the bridge. And so we seized the opportunity here to propose Grover Street as a sort of local street, but also a pedestrian promenade. So this is a 32-foot street on either side, just carrying one lane of traffic and parking, and then the possibility that underneath the bridge there could be some urban area beneath there for festival market or other types of events.
Food carts.
Or food carts, right. So in terms of phasing, phase 1A is the reconstruction of Moody and River Parkway and also the reconstruction of Porter through the light rail project. And so that is what we pursued the Portland Innovation Quadrant's Tiger application, Tiger grant application, federal stimulus grant application, and we'll hear about that in January, whether or not we were successful with that grant application. Phase 1B is completing that east-west street network, as well as beginning to complete the network of Bond Avenue. And then phase 2, as contemplated, would be filling in the remainder of the street network around the active barge building facility. So in terms of process, after we had gone through a series of meetings with the North District property owners themselves and regional stakeholders, we essentially brought the proposal out before a whole series of organizations, both focused on the South Waterfront District themselves, as well as the surrounding area. So here's a whole series of briefings that we did in the spring and summer, including presentations to the Sweeney Parks and Transportation Committees.
And how was your proposal changed in response to the input you heard?
A lot of it, because this is a very technical document, a lot of the response actually that really impacted the process came from technical reviewers, either within the city, but also by the Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committees. They had some very specific pieces they wanted to see us change in terms of adding additional accommodation for bicycle and pedestrians. So that's probably the main piece. One thing that I think is probably not unique, as you're talking about planners having a presence in neighborhoods, the staff you see before you have had a long experience with working in South Waterfront. So I think we took it upon ourselves during this process to represent the interests we've heard over the last 10 years of preparing this district to make sure that we kept it consistent. And I think that was validated through these briefings. We heard very good response from these neighborhood groups that we had done the right thing.
Thank you.
Yeah. So the request before you today is to adopt by resolution this update to the South Waterfront street plan and direct us to include these updates to the street plan in the next update of the TSP, and is also to direct the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability to do an update to have the zoning maps reflect this new amendment. And so Troy will be...
Yeah, I should note that we have a council date with you on December 2nd to bring that forward, as well as a series of other cleanup code amendments that are addressing the Greenway Development Plan and a couple other just procedural errors we found on the code over the years.
So I'd like to add one more to that list, and I was a little disturbed in reading this report to find that we can have native-like plants as native plants.
Right, right.
That's of concern to me, that this whole area was supposed to be native plants when first envisioned a long time ago. So I'd like consideration of that.
You say native-like?
Native-like. My question was, what is a native-like plant?
I can answer that question if you'd like, right off. There was a consideration in the South Waterfront plan that addresses, in the Greenway itself, definitely native. As you get further back into the district, native and native-like. Native-like often is a plant of the same ecotone or same kind of climate zone. It may have native-looking characteristics, but not necessarily truly a native. But in the Greenway itself, specifically, it has to be natives. And we've done a really good job of actually going back over that list that was adopted in what you, the plan you're going to see in a couple weeks.
Why the difference?
The idea was that doing solidly natives back and the rest of it makes it a little bit harder to maintain in some situations. In some other cases, an ornamental plant that actually mimics the character of it is satisfactory and allows for more variety than we would just have through just native plants alone.
Are you convinced?
No, particularly lawn, grass in the planter strip. That just doesn't make sense in an area right. That we want to be a showcase for what we're doing in Portland on many different fronts.
I will say that we have changed our thinking quite a bit about how we address green streets and other sustainability elements in the landscape since 2002, so that's a fair criticism.
Thank you. Yep. I always thought native plants, by definition, required less maintenance because they were native.
They do, but they don't always hold up. I mean, I'm going to put my landscape architecture hat back on. It's been a while. But they don't always hold up to the same level of abuse that native plants would in certain situations. So if you have areas where you have high traffic volumes, high pedestrian impacts, cars and other things affecting the landscaping, sometimes natives don't hold up quite as well as other ornamental species that may have been engineered, if you will, to better handle that situation.
I also recall that, and so I think the legislative intent is native by the council, unless there's a really good reason not to. But I recall getting a briefing on, because of the permanent shade conditions of some of the ground on the street next to buildings, that coming up with natives in some very limited situations would be challenging, but very limited.
Certainly the application within the district, I am not able to recall a place where grass was used as the planting strip material. So it may be also just the culture of the district in terms of pursuing LEED certification and trying to be sustainable and in development. The folks have definitely been leaning away from that option.
Yeah. And if you look at the new park, the new park that's coming online soon, it has a tremendous amount of native materials in there as well. And that wasn't something that was actually required originally. That's just a course that we're kind of taking now as designers and implementers. So it seems to be occurring.
You just referenced the new park, meaning Carruthers Park?
Yes.
So this is probably as good as any time just to advise my colleagues that originally we had a soft opening scheduled for next week with a full-blown opening in the spring, and there's a bifurcation because of the landscaping and other things. We're going to postpone this soft opening a little bit to give the contractor a little more time to remedy a few issues that have come up, and we'll be rescheduling that soft opening, but we're on track to have the full opening on time this spring.
I just also want to add, I apologize, I had to step out on a business retention quick issue. The urgency to all this has been heightened since the last legislative session. Did you go into this?
We didn't.
With the Oregon System of Higher Education's successful legislative lobbying for the bioscience building, the sooner we can get that under construction, more people will put to work. It is. So this consideration of investments in this area and the Tiger Grant serves the entire community in terms of access to new jobs. It will be the co-location of the pharmacy school from OSU, co-location with PSU and OHSU's new facilities. So we're trying to move this forward as aggressively as possible for the short and long-term economic benefits to Portland families. Thank you all very much. Sure. Has anyone signed up to testify?
We have four people. Will you come up? Dick Cooley, George Moranis, and Mike Houck first, and then Linda Robinson.
Welcome back to the City Council. Glad you're here. You just need to give us your first and last name, and you'll have 3 minutes. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Mayor Adams, commissioners, I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is George Mirandis. I'm a managing member of GHS, the smallest stakeholder in the North District. Our property is located just north of the Ross Island Bridge. It's approximately 2.77 acres, containing an office building that was initially known as the Westwood Building, and then later on as a Swinnerton Building. Now it's We call it the 3030 building. Needless to say, the north end of South Waterfront has the potential to be the great next great neighborhood in Portland, in our opinion. And with the coming of light rail and the proposed OHSU campus development, there's an opportunity to capitalize on the next wave of development in South Waterfront. As the smallest stakeholder in the North District, we've worked a number of years to move the redevelopment of our property forward. We've had interest from multiple potential investors, prospects, and each time we found it difficult to move the process forward due to the lack of shared development vision for the surrounding area and the uncertainty regarding the exact location and phasing plan for street and transit infrastructure required to support development. The North District Partnership, under the leadership of Bruce Warner, Geraldine Moyle at PDC, and Sue Keel and Art Pierce, PDOT, and others, participants, brought the area stakeholders together along with city agencies, and we came to a consensus on the vision of the area and the infrastructure needed to support development. Although challenging at times, the process successfully achieved consensus on key items and set the stage for the development to occur in the area supporting the region's investment in high-capacity transit through this district. The North District Partnership process also prepared city agencies with North District stakeholder support to prepare a Federal Innovation Quadrant Tiger Grant. I know that you're totally familiar, to fund reconstruction of Southwest Moody. In closing, I fully support the outcome of the North District Partnership process and the updated street plan presented for your adoption today, and look forward to continued collaboration with the city as we move to accomplishing the vision for this area. And I appreciate the opportunity to at least share our thoughts on the subject.
Well, you all and your firm have been great partners, so thank you.
Appreciate that.
Mr. Houck.
Mayor Adams, commissioners, I'm here today. My name is Mike Houck. I'm here representing the Urban Green Spaces Institute and as an individual who, going back to 1999, during the concept planning process and the Greenway planning process, have invested a huge amount of time and energy into this. And I am here to support adoption of the plan. I normally, I think I'm expected to focus more on the native plant issue and natural areas, but as you know, and all of you can cite chapter and verse of Olmsted's 1903 master plan for Portland Parks, calls for a comprehensive park system, including active recreation areas. And the reason we're here to support adoption of this plan is that it does, as was pointed out by staff, create an area under the Ross Island Bridge that is appropriate for active recreational use. And given the lack of active recreation opportunities in South Waterfront neighborhood at this point, we feel it's extremely important that need be met in the neighborhood. One thing I would like to point out, there will be people or have been folks, including myself actually in the past, who have thought of a park under the Ross Island Bridge is probably not that appropriate an area. But I'll have to say, as an early naysayer to the East Bank Esplanade development, which I'm embarrassed at this point in my life to indicate, I really had suspicions about locating that Esplanade next to I-5 freeway.
I remember.
It was a spectacular success. And in fact, in this case, most of the noise in the area really comes from background noise from the I-5 freeway, frankly, not so much from the Ross Island Bridge. So I think it is an appropriate place for an active recreation park. I would close by saying, to the extent, and Bob Salinger could not be here today and asked me to point out that, to the extent that while an active recreation design is being implemented for the park, that to the extent native vegetation can be incorporated into that design, we're very supportive of that. Our major concern, of course, is that we do a good job on the Greenway and certainly in terms of restoration of the banks.
So, Mike, are you saying you're not supportive of the proposed new location of
Yeah, department? I am.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this plan, one of the criteria of this plan is that desired outcomes meet the needs of parks and open space, and we agree that the plan as presented to you this morning does accomplish that.
Thank you, Mr. Houck.
Appreciate Thank you.
It. Anyone else signed up to testify?
Linda Robinson.
Ms. Robinson, welcome back. Glad you're here.
Mayor, Linda Robinson is the newest member of our Parks Board, and we're delighted to have her in that capacity.
You always cling to every word, now doubly so.
Well, I'm speaking as myself today. I'm not, the board hasn't taken a position that I'm aware of on this, but I just wanted to express my support also for the revised street plan and that it has worked around the proposed a park, and a park large enough for some active recreation. You know, if we want to attract and keep families in the central city, we do need some active recreation opportunities. And the location where it is, with a combination of working with some possibilities of restoration of the riverbank and then the more active recreation set right, you know, both of those in this area is really a nice combination. And so I support the proposed plan.
Thank you very much, Linda. Appreciate it and all your ongoing efforts. Sue, would you please call the vote?
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
I greatly appreciate the work of staff on this and for giving me more information. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, good work. I hope we've finally got it this time in terms of the street plan. This has been changed quite a bit over the years, so I hope this is the last iteration and becomes the skeleton on which all future success of South Waterfront is built. Aye.
Adams.
Well, I, because of the change in ownership over the years and our emerging greater expertise in the science, you know, the science has gotten better on a lot of this stuff. I'm, as alluded to by Commissioner Saltzman, I'm just very grateful that you all have had the long-term experience with this part of town, because I can't imagine where we'd be without it. So thank you very much. Really appreciate it. This is exceptional work. Aye. So approved. Can you please read the title for second reading, item number 1623?
Remove redundant and outdated language, reconcile conflicting code revisions, and amend regulations and permit charges for sidewalks, curbs, and driveways, City Code Title 17.
We'll come back by mid-January with our recommendation on the amount of time necessary, but I'd like to move this forward. So would you please call the vote?
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz?
Well, thank you, Mayor, for giving me an extra week to look into this, and also John Rist and Gail Wallace and Tom Caulfield, who gave me more information. And my understanding is that we don't actually start enforcing after 20 days, that we give a reasonable amount of time as long as the citizen has initiated the work. I am interested in looking into expanding the options for financing of these improvements, in addition to the seniors and low-income options that are already available. I'm very comfortable with this now. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Adams.
Thank you all. Aye. So approved. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinances 1624, 1625?
No.
I think those are the two related ones, right? Are those not related? Just 1624.
It's going to be both of us, but they're not allowed.
Okay. 1624.
1624. Adopt budget adjustment recommendations and the supplemental budget for the FY 2009-10 fall supplemental budget process and make budget adjustments in various funds.
Mr. Scott, welcome back.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Andrew Scott, Financial Planning Manager. And joining me is Claudio Camposano, who's our city bump coordinator. So as what you have before you is the FY 2009-10 fall bump. There are a number of routine transactions included, as well as some non-routine actions that we're recommending council take. And so I will walk briefly through the major issues that are in the bump, and then, of course, we'd be happy to answer any specific questions.
Could you just state for citizens at home what the bump is?
Yes, I'm sorry. It's the city's budget monitoring process, and we do this three times a year, and it gives bureaus the opportunity to make adjustments to their budget and other sort of both technical and policy-related changes.
No, this is
The biggest issue that the city is facing in this particular fall bump is that we ended last fiscal year with a $2 million general fund shortfall, and that general fund shortfall does carry over into the current fiscal year. Although that's a small amount compared to the size of the overall general fund, Both financial planning and the mayor believe it's important to close the gap now. It's possible that other issues may arise during the year, and we don't want that shortfall to contribute to a larger problem or a larger deficit later on. So this fall bump takes four actions to balance the 9-10 budget and deal with that $2 million shortfall, and I'm going to go into more detail on each of these. It reduces the utility license and franchise fee transfer to the Department of Transportation. It reduces the carryover encumbrance and new requests based on financial planning recommendations. It uses a small amount of general fund contingency, and finally, it makes across-the-board reductions in bureaus to close the remaining gap. So taking those in order, in terms of the utility license and franchise fee revenue to the Department of Transportation, Council passed an ordinance in July of 2008 that dedicated excess utility license and franchise fees to transportation. In the last fiscal year, the city received $3 million in excess revenues above forecast. We initially assumed in financial planning that all $3 million should go to transportation. However, after further analysis, we determined that franchise settlements should probably be more appropriately considered collection of prior year revenues and not new revenues, as well as investigating the legislative intent behind the policy. And the mayor assured us that that was not, in fact, the intent of the initial policy. So using that new definition, PBOT's transfer is reduced by $635,000, which leaves them with a net gain of $2.4 million. So they are still getting some excess utility license fee, but we did reduce it by $635,000. In terms of carryovers, encumbrances, and new requests, again, in the fall bump, bureaus have the opportunity to carry over unspent money from last year, as well as encumbrances that, and encumbrances are contracts, legal contracts that the city's entered into. When a bureau enters into a contract, we encumber the funds to make sure they're not spent on something else. They can do program carryovers, encumbrance carryovers, and also put new requests forward. So in this fall bump, bureaus asked for fewer encumbrance carryovers than we had on the books at the end of 08-09. So that actually generated a little bit of a savings. And that is normal behavior for bureaus, but they did again this year. However, at the same time they asked for fewer encumbrance carryovers, they also asked for more program carryovers than were expected, as well as put $771,000 of new requests on the table. Financial planning made recommendations on all of those, all three of those, and we reduced the total amounts requested by $346,000. And details of those packages and our recommendations are available in Exhibit 4. And again, I'd be happy to go through any of the specifics if council wants to.
Most of them are parks, right?
Well, there are a number of different requests. The reductions are in both police and parks were two of the larger reductions, as well as we made two reductions. OMF had requested a couple packages that we did recommend against in terms of new funding and asked them to come back in the spring bump if that was needed. The third item was general fund contingency, and what we've recommended is that in this fall bump that the city use $280,300 of general fund contingency in order to balance the current fiscal year's budget. This will leave just about $900,000 available for the rest of the year, and that's actually consistent with where we've been in past years. The only difference and the only note of caution I would put out is we did start with a larger contingency this year, and so we have spent relatively rapidly in the first few months, but I do feel like the $900,000 is a prudent amount to spend. It's prudent to spend the $280,000, and the $900,000 is an appropriate amount for anything unexpected that might arise for the rest of the year. Finally, the last thing, and probably the one that impacts the bureaus the most, are the across-the-board reductions. After taking those first three actions, we were left with a $759,304 gap. Financial planning is recommending that we fill that hole with across-the-board cuts to general fund bureaus, and the across-the-board cuts amount to 0.2% of all general fund discretionary. Again, specific bureau reductions are available, are detailed in Exhibit 4. We did brief the mayor and council on this approach. However, we didn't have time to work with the bureaus to determine exactly where those cuts would come from. They're relatively small, but they will have an impact. And so we've put them in specific places, but bureaus will have flexibility to allocate those reductions throughout their budgets as they see fit moving forward. And they can either do that administratively for certain things, or if it's a change between major object categories in the winter bump, they could reallocate that. So again, it's only a 0.2% reduction, but it does have an impact on some bureaus' operations. In addition, then, those four actions close the general fund gap that we had. There are some non-general fund changes that are included in the bump, and those are detailed on page 5 of the memo that was provided to your offices. Most of those just reflect carryover of prior year resources for non-general fund bureaus and some bond sales as well for capital projects. And then the last thing I would note is in terms of position changes, there are a handful of permanent position changes that are in the bump, and those are the ones that council needs to approve. The Police Bureau is eliminating one police officer position in order to fund some reclassifications within the Bureau. Parks is eliminating four positions and adding six back for a net gain of two positions. And finally, OMF is eliminating one position and adding two for a net gain of one position. I'd be happy to answer any questions about details or anything else in the bump.
So what is the aggregate reduction to the Police Bureau's budget from this bump?
The mid-year reduction for the Police Bureau is $283,000. That's the 0.2%. We also then made recommendations.